everybody, and welcome back to Vet Chat. On today's episode, I'm delighted to be joined by a brand new guest, Dr. Bronwyn Orr, and this is going to be a great conversation as she shares her thoughts around the evolution of veterinary teams and shaping the future of the profession. So really excited to get into this podcast, but before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. Bronwyn is an Australian veterinarian passionate about animal welfare, veterinary workforce matters and advocacy. She was the youngest ever president of the Australian Veterinary Association. She was awarded a Churchill Fellowship in 2023 to investigate overseas workforce programs that get vets where they need to be. She runs Australia's first urgent care veterinary clinic and more recently took over the running of Causal, held in Cambridge every year. I hope I said that right, Bronwyn. Yeah. She currently works with the AVA in the newly created role of Senior Manager of Government Relations. She is the Chief Medical Officer at VetNovo and is working with Southern Cross University to establish a new veterinary degree in Australia. So welcome, Bronwyn. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
So to get started, should we discuss the role of veterinary teams and how you think it's evolved over recent years, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Just a little, small minuscule topic to get us started. I think veterinary teams have, I mean, for starters, veterinarians have never been, lone ships in the night. There's always been people helping veterinarians, and perhaps the name for them has changed, assistants and that sort of thing. But veterinarians have always had people helping them. And while, we know plenty of vets who, particularly in mixed practice, farm animal practice, will go off on their own, to do house calls and that sort of thing on their own, same with small animal practice, I think we can all agree that we work best when we work in a team. And that's for a lot of different reasons, but you can't be all things to all people and you can't do all things at the same time. And you need to have that complementary approach. So in terms of where we're going, I think it's really interesting space because firstly, I should just get out of the way that I'm from Australia, as you can probably tell before my accent, and we have a very different system. We have veterinary nurses and they're absolutely core and crucial to our teams. Mm-hmm. But unlike the UK, and the US, they're not a legally recognized profession. So they're not registered except for the state of Western Australia. So it does mean that we have veterinary nurses that have a really wide scope of education and experience. Mm-hmm. A sort of a TAFE certificate, which is not university, but more trade school. That's kind of considered the standard qualification. Although we have people with, Bachelor of Veterinary Technology degrees, all the way through to people who don't have credentials, but have, extensive experience and on-the-job experience. So for us, it's we're all talking about the same thing. We're all talking about, veterinary nurses, paraprofessionals, veterinary technicians and assistants. But it is just important to know that each country kind of classifies them slightly differently. And then obviously, talking about the UK, in the US, it is also different there. They have much more stratified positions, and they are also, registrable. So their veterinary technicians are registered and then they have veterinary assistants and that sort of thing. So, but either way, we have these teams in veterinary medicine because we know that we deliver the best care for patients. We get the best outcomes when we work together as a team. And that's purely because, you just have to look at the human healthcare system. Can you imagine if we had our hospitals just run by doctors? It would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
It would be an absolute circus. I can say that because my husband is a doctor. But, they absolutely rely on allied health professionals, occupational therapists, physiotherapists, and nurses to run it. If you get admitted to a human hospital, or say a broken arm or something like that, you might see a doctor for less than 3% of your total time there. Everyone else is going to be allied health professionals, paraprofessionals, nurses, that sort of thing. And I think in vet medicine, we're actually, we're a little bit perhaps behind the times, I think, and particularly in Australia. But I know a lot of clinics run like this where the vets still largely do a huge amount of the work, including stuff that should probably be done by the nurses and techs. So in Australia, for example, it's not uncommon that the vets will, you know, do a consult, then they'll take the patient out the back, they will draw the blood themselves, they will run the blood, you know, then they might do a urinalysis. And so they're doing all these things, which, don't get me wrong, it's fun to do technical skills, to practice your technical skills, but we have people around us who are very qualified and who can do those things. And I think we really need to lean on them. And something I wanted to talk about is that it's not just an efficiency thing, it's also career satisfaction. You know we have high rates of attrition for both veterinary nurses, veterinary technicians, as well as veterinarians. And I think particularly for our paraprofessional staff, you know, a big part of that is probably not being able to practice to their within their clinical scope, being able to practice to the limits of their qualifications and experience. I think that gives you satisfaction. And if you're not able to do that, that can be very frustrating. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's interesting in the UK. I think it sounds like we do lean on the wider team much, much more than what you're describing. But yeah, I mean, I think, do you think in Australia it's changed a lot over recent years? Like, have you noticed a change of the teams and how they're all kind of working?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a cultural thing more than anything. It's not like our nurses have suddenly developed skills that they didn't have before. It's more about this cultural acceptance of, well, what is it that a vet, only a vet can do, right? And it's diagnosing, it's prescribing, and it's surgery. You know, that's kind of it. Everything else can be done by, you know, qualified and trained staff, you know, that are sort of assisting. And so I think culturally that's changing, certainly with the rise of corporates. They, you know, obviously maximum efficiency is their sort of flavor. And so they certainly are relying more on the teams. But I do think in Australia we have a situation where you know, our nurses don't have a defined scope of practice. And I think that's definitely the next step. So we're kind of at the point where we're not too far off mandatory registration at the moment. It's voluntary, but mandatory registration is going to come in. And with registration comes scope of practice. And I think that's really important, defining it, because there is that nervousness, I think, from some vets about delegating responsibility, you know, it's a trust thing as well, I suppose. Certainly in Australia, if you're the veterinarian who's on, you're legally responsible for all the advice and, you know, acts that are performed in the clinic by the sort of support staff. So the receptionist who answers the phone and gives, you know, advice over the phone, the nurse who's perhaps, you know, doing induction of anesthesia, that's all on you. And obviously there's differences in terms of people's comfort with that and comfort in each other's skills, but I think that's just an evolution that will come to be. I think everyone having their own registration is such an important step, because that really does build a lot of trust and kind of, I guess, alleviate some of that concern that some vets might have. It's not your license on the line, it's other people's license on the line. I think it's a really positive thing. I like to think that the veterinary nursing and veterinary technician professions are kind of like where human registered nurses used to be maybe 50, 60 years ago. You know, like you look at human nurses now and, you know, widely respected profession, and they have their own scope of practice and they can go on and become nurse practitioners and stuff. You know, there's now mid-level professionals, and there's all of these things that's there for them, but that's an evolution over time that didn't just suddenly happen. If you look back 50, 70 years ago, nurses were trained up on the wards, and they didn't have university experience, and it was like an apprenticeship model. So it's different, but I think it's a positive thing.
Are you currently looking for a new role? Or maybe you're thinking about locuming but don't know where to start? Contact Simply Vets. We are a sister company to the Webinar Vet. We offer a tailored recruitment guidance to help you secure a dream permanent role. And we run Locums Payroll too, which is free for the locums to use. Visit simplyvets.com to find out how we can help.
You touched upon there, actually, it's really interesting, delegation and trust and, you know, how they're key things that can, you know, make a huge difference in terms of veterinary teams. Are there any other points you'd like to mention around teamwork and how important you think, you know, that is to shape the future of veterinary practice?
Yeah, I think I think what I was saying before is just, I guess, recognizing everyone's role in the team and respecting that. I mean, I think good teams can't function without mutual respect. Everyone needs to appreciate what everyone else does. I am a big believer in positivity. And I don't mean that from like a let's pretend everything's great and ignore all the bad things, but try to approach, you know, situations with grace and with positivity. So, you know, assume the best, not assume the worst. And this is particularly important, I think, with teamwork, because it's really easy, particularly when you have, say, for example, really busy hospitals or multiple shifts in a hospital, that you can have teams that don't work together all the time. And without having that really close affiliation, you can get miscommunications and all sorts of things, which really erodes that trust and respect. And so I certainly, for my own clinic, I definitely encourage people to, try to approach things, give everyone the benefit of the doubt, And, you know, if there are genuine mistakes, that's fine. We all make mistakes. Trying to kind of, I guess, establish that culture. But everyone approaches it differently. Every team is different. And I think that's important too. It's hugely dependent on the individuals within the team as to the dynamics. You can't just, you know, take a corporate philosophy or something that you learned in business school about how an ideal team should be and then just impose that on a group of people. It genuinely doesn't work.
Yeah, totally agree. And do you think with that in mind, that there are some like key characteristics that you need for a successful team?
Yeah, I think all teams do need good leadership, and not from a a top level or managerial level or anything like that. I mean, like leading from the front, as in, you know, you're scrubbed in, you're in the trenches as well, but you do need leadership, I think. And that's again just about setting tone and checking tone and making sure that everyone's on the same page and addressing problems early and that sort of thing. And then I do believe that people need to approach things the right way. You've got to have the right attitude, because I'm sure we've all worked in teams where there's been one or two people who haven't had the best attitude, and you know, a lot of the time they've got stuff going on in their lives or whatever, which spills over into work. But yeah, it's really hard to maintain positivity and respect and grace when there is that constant, rough edge and pushback. And I think in those situations, again, that's where that leadership comes in. You need someone to kind of pull that person aside and be like, okay, what's going on? Let's try and fix it. Address problems early, that sort of thing. It's just, there are universal rules, I think, with teamwork, but I am a big believer that every team is different. So you do kind of need to adapt a little bit.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Brandon. That sounds good. Yeah, I think being adaptable is key, isn't it? Absolutely. Do you have any advice for our listeners around culture and anything that you can do to kind of foster a positive culture in practice?
Yeah, well, I was trawling LinkedIn the other day and I saw a really good quote, which I'm sure many people have heard before, but essentially, you have culture whether you foster it or not, whether you cultivate it or not. Like, it's not, culture is not something that you decide, okay, I'm going to institute a good team culture, I'm going to institute a positive culture, and then you go about doing it. It's there regardless if you do anything or not.
So true.
All you can do is try to mold it and and push it in the direction that you want it to go into. And I think, again, that comes down to modeling the behaviors that you want. I guess this applies to parenthood as well, but you know, you can't be telling people to do one thing and then do the opposite, or to not believe in it in yourself. I also think that I like, for example, with my team, it's a small team and they have to be agile, and they often work with a different person almost every shift. Like, it's a very large team of casual staff. And so I try to encourage everyone to muck in. So, you know, if you see that someone is struggling, they've got a lot on their plate, but you're a bit quiet, while from an efficiency point of view, it probably doesn't make sense to have, you know, the vets changing the bins if we were like purely in business corporate world looking at things on paper. If the vet's standing around drinking some water and the nurses and receptionists are running around trying to scrub the clinic before close, that's just, I think that's really poor culture. Like, I want everyone to muck in, to help out, help each other. And I think that, like, that approach really does mean that, like, when problems arise, because they always do, you know, you can approach it in a really sort of collaborative way. And I think that's probably one of the things that I would definitely recommend for people for culture. I'm not an expert on it, though. So I do think that I take a very intuitive approach. You know, I do get feedback from my staff all the time, and I encourage feedback on things that we can improve, and also just a general vibe check. And, you know, it has been really positive, which is great. But I do think if people out there are struggling with the culture and the teams, it is worth reaching out to, you know, there's a bunch of people who work in the space, both in our industry and outside the industry. Because if you don't get the culture that you need for your practice, that's going to be one of the biggest drags on a healthy workplace. You know, there's, you can say that you're, you know, equal opportunity and no discrimination and no bullying and all this other stuff, but then if you aren't sure that that is your culture, if you aren't complete, you know, doing everything you can to model the right behavior and stamp out the stuff that you don't like, it doesn't really matter what you say. And if anything, it makes it worse, because, you know, our staff are smart. They can totally pick up, I don't know if I can swear, but I'm Australian. So they can detect bullshit when they hear it. So I think you just have to be really true and honest and transparent.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. And then if we have a little look just further ahead, are there any kind of trends that you see that could, you know, come in the future that could impact our teams?
Yeah. Look, that's a really good question. Big question. I'm certainly not a futurist, but I do very closely pay attention to regulatory trends, as well as obviously innovative trends generally, for, you know, everything, not just our industry. Innovation comes first and then regulation comes second. So regulation's sort of playing catch up, I think, in a lot of spaces. Probably the most obvious one is like telemedicine. And there's been quite a few changes in the US about very, very recently about establishing, you know, veterinary patient client relationships virtually, which has always been, I guess, one of the big hurdles with telemedicine, is, you know, certainly in Australia, for example, you can't like prescribe medications or anything like that unless you've seen the pet yourself. And so that really does limit the scope of telemedicine. But, you know, if the move is to having that foregone, for lack of a better word, where, you know, in certain jurisdictions around the world, telemedicine will be able to prescribe and see new patients and stuff virtually, I think that'll be an interesting space, because I know certainly, for example, in Australia, and I'm sure it's the same in the UK, quite a lot of veterinary nurses get involved with telemedicine, teletriage. So they'll, you know, triage the cases, and then if need be, they'll escalate them either to an on-call veterinarian, like a physical veterinarian, or to a telemedicine veterinarian. So seeing how that works, that sort of team dynamic is interesting as well. You know, the virtual and the physical, like, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think it's already happening, really, where especially big corporates, they've got a virtual team who are doing their work, and then they'll refer to like an in-person physical team and kind of making that all work smoothly and synergistically. I guess, you know, things like telemedicine absolutely have the potential to decrease in-person collaboration and teamwork, and almost siloing roles, like where it does go almost like a passing of the baton. So perhaps you'll have the nurse do teletriage and then they pass it to the vet who do telemedicine or something like that. Yeah. And there's less of that collaborative work that you probably get in practice where, you know, often I'll have a sick patient in and I'll have my nurse in there with me and we'll be, you know, doing a TPR, taking notes, and then we'll go take blood. And the whole time you're working very collaboratively, you're discussing the case, you're talking about what you're going to do next. And I really enjoy that, and I'm sure others do too, because it's really enriching for everyone to kind of work up cases like that. From what I've seen with telemedicine, I think it is a lot more siloed and a lot more sort of staggered, where you do pass the baton from one to the other. But, you know, who knows? Like, it's just one of those really open spaces. We could go in so many different directions. I do think Australia is very conservative, so I can't imagine we're going to adopt anything like that anytime soon in terms of establishing a virtual patient-client relationship. And I'm sure probably the UK is fairly similar. Like, there's no really recent moves to do that. The US is definitely the, I guess, front line for this because they have, well, a lot of reasons, and hopefully I don't upset anyone by saying this, but they probably have more corporate interests and pushing. I mean, it's a much larger population. So I definitely think they're the front line with a lot of these technological changes, because I guess the other big one is AI. Mm-hmm. And we've already seen like an explosion in the last like year or two of medical record writing apps using AI. So essentially where they use, you know, oh my gosh, I'm going to show how much of a technophile I am here, but, you know, Google like ability to capture your voice, record you, and then it will automatically transcribe it into notes. There's quite a few of those. And I can really see huge advantages there. Like, I mean, we all know that writing up your notes is a huge time waste. You have to do it, obviously. It's an important part of the process, but it's, you know, if you could change something that often takes 10 minutes or 5 minutes into, you know, 1 minute where you're just quickly checking it, that can be a huge help. I mean, and some people take even longer than that to write up, right? So I think that's potentially a really big benefit. But I think the elephant in the room, which is always a bit scary, is AI going to replace part of what we do as vets? So if you think about it, vets are kind of walking diagnostic trees. We're trained to take in a whole bunch of information and analyze it in our head, which is a computer, and then sort of come up with a plan, right? So then we're going to, sometimes we're lucky and we're like, it's 100% this, and you can pick the diagnosis because of the, you know, collection of information you have. But a lot of the time we then start on a pathway. So we'll be like, okay, we're going to maybe take some bloods, or, you know, we're going to do an FNA on that lump or something. We're going to get more information, but we make a plan. Mm-hmm. And you can quite easily see how AI could do that. If you feed the right information in, there's no reason that, you know, we can't have software programs that make that decision for us. And, you know, obviously, initially, it's going to be a very blunt tool, but it will be refined over time and get better. I mean, AI is essentially just replicating the knowledge that's already out there. So how did we learn? We learned from lectures and textbooks and online videos, and that's how AI learns. So I can definitely see that being something down the track. I don't think in the next year or two, but, you know, maybe 5-10 years, who knows? Mm-hmm. And then the question is, so how do we not only bring value, but how do we use that safely? And I think, you know, it's like there's a lot of jobs now in Australia, for example. We have a lot of mines, coal mines, unfortunately. But you know, there's some people's roles, engineers, whose whole role is just to assess panels of, you know, lights and instruments, and just make sure everything's okay, and pick things up if they're not. And you know, factories are the same. They're getting rid of people on the production lines, and they're replacing with people who just watch the machines and make sure that everything's okay and step in when need be.
Yeah.
And you know, while obviously you can't ever replace the human side of things, so the relationship that the vet has with the client and with the patient, and that sort of the what we traditionally used to call like the softer skills, the actual diagnostic stuff that we do could absolutely be augmented, potentially replaced. I don't think anyone would feel entirely comfortable with replaced, but definitely augmented with software. And you know, maybe we'll see it one day as being like not too dissimilar from, you know, when we use formularies on our apps on our phones and stuff, or you know, maybe like the AI writing. But I do think it's scary for me anyway to think about, because it's just such a new thing. And it's also I think of myself as a vet, and I'm like, one of the most valuable things is that my ability to you know, make decisions and diagnosis, and you know, what would we be without that. So I just think there's nothing that I know of that's really close on the horizon for that, but I definitely think that's a space to watch, because it's something that could easily be replicated, given that we ourselves learnt, right? We learnt at one point in time, none of us were born vets. And so mm-hmm. therefore we can probably train computers to do that too. Oops, yeah. Sorry, I have a cat.
Yeah, AI is this whole new beast, isn't it? I think that we're actually at the webinar that we're running an AI summit, and so we'll keep you posted on that. But yeah,
that sounds great.
Yeah, there's just so much going on, and I think everybody kind of feels the same, you know, a little bit cautious, but know that we're going to have to embrace it, you know, because it's coming.
It's like any new thing, right? You feel a little bit scared and a little bit excited at the same time. And I think the main thing is with AI is that we just have to make sure we steward it properly, and that's our role as the profession, is that we have to make sure that whatever tools are developed safely, appropriately, and end up with a better result at the end of the day, not a sort of cheapening or a worse result for patients.
Yeah, absolutely. We are just close to running out of time, but I've really enjoyed listening to you today, Bronwyn. Thank you so much. You've shared so many useful bits of information there, that lots for our listeners to take away. Was there anything that you hadn't covered yet that you'd just like to finish with?
The only thing I just wanted to mention is that if anyone is interested in sort of hearing more, is that I have a weekly sort of newsletter bulletin called Vet Matters, where I talk about sort of issues that are affecting the profession, not just in Australia, but in the UK, the US, Canada. And also we'll be talking about the workforce stuff that I'm doing with the Churchill Fellowship. So if anyone's a nerd for talking about the profession, it's not clinical at all, I must forewarn everyone. It's talking about business and regulation and policy and the issues that we face. Please check it out. It's called Vet Matters.
Oh, brilliant. And I've seen that on your LinkedIn before. So is that the best place for people to go if they want to subscribe?
Find you on LinkedIn? Yep. They can go LinkedIn, or they can just Google it. It's on Substack. So yeah, they'll be able to find it.
Okay, fantastic. Oh, well, Bronwyn, thank you so much again for joining us today. I know you're incredibly busy and you're doing all of these wonderful things, plus having, you know, raising a small child at the same time. So thank you so much. We really appreciate your time and for you giving up your Friday night.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. It was great to chat.
Thanks a lot. Bye.